Who else but you, the supreme personality of Godhead, could deliver the earth from within the water? It is not very wonderful for you, however, because you acted most wonderfully in the creation of the universe. By your energy, you have created this wonderful cosmic manifestation. Report by Srila Prabhupada. When a scientist discovers something impressive to the ignorant mass of people, the common man, without inquiry, accepts such a discovery as wonderful. But the intelligent man is not struck with wonder by such discoveries. He gives all credit to the person who created the wonderful brain of the scientist. A common man is also struck with wonder by the wonderful action of material nature, and he gives all credit to the cosmic manifestation. The learned Krishna conscious person, however, knows well that behind the cosmic manifestation is the brain of Krishna, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.10, Vayadyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. Since Krishna can direct the wonderful cosmic manifestation, it is not at all wonderful for him to assume the gigantic form of a boar and thus deliver the earth from the mire of the water. A devotee is therefore not astonished to see the wonderful boar, because he knows that the Lord is able to act far more wonderfully by his potencies, which are inconceivable to the brain of even the most erudite scientist. So, I thought I would say a little bit about something inconceivable to the brain of even the most erudite scientist, namely the shape of the earth. Let's see, is the earth flat or is it round? Well, of course, the Flat Earth Society is sort of an archetypal fringe organization in which you will only find people completely devoid of anything resembling sanity. So we certainly couldn't say that it's flat. What is the shape of the earth? I thought I would read from some conversations with Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, which dealt with this topic. Let's see. There are two conversations which shed some light on the topic, and they're kind of interesting. Let's see. The first one, this was in Vrindavan, July 5th, 1977. So devotees who are there were discussing with Srila Prabhupada about the shape of the earth. And they were seeing that in the fifth canto, it seemed as though the earth was flat, basically. Rather mountainous, to be sure, but still not exactly a globe that you could go around. And they were raising a question about, well, suppose you start in Los Angeles and you go to Japan, and then you go across to India, let's say, New Delhi, and you keep on going over to London, and you cross over to New York, and you wind up in Los Angeles. How do we explain that? So they were asking this question. So we have Bhakti Prema. This, we have to reply to this question. They say if we go, we start from Los Angeles and arrive Japan. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada, Japan and Los Angeles and India, that is not the whole thing. Bhakti Prema. Yeah, that is not the whole thing, but it is a basic point. Prabhupada. Ha, insignificant. Bhakti Prema. According to Srimad Bhagavatam, if we start from London, Prabhupada, that argument also I have refuted. Just like animal, he is bound up. He is rotating around the log, and within that there may be Japan, there may be Calcutta, there may be Los Angeles. You can think this is there, but that is not all. Within that rounding circle, whatever it is there, you may think this is all, but that is not all. He is limited condition. Within that limitation, he's speaking. But Himalaya and other things far beyond their limitation. That I have already explained. He's speaking within his limitation. Our position should be to correctly represent what is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But if there is some question, we should ask. Just like I'm answering to the reasonable point, that if you are conditioned, within your condition you can see, you can experience, but beyond that you have no right to see. What is Los Angeles, Calcutta, Japan? This is very insignificant space. And they're talking of that. We are talking that Himalaya Mountain, we have crossed over Himalaya, we have conquered outer space. How can they think of it? So this is one conversation. So the example here is of a bull or an ox, which is hooked up to a central post so that it goes around in a circle for threshing grain. So the animal has its senses constrained so that it's going around in that circle, but it's part of a larger continuum. But because of the arrangement of the harness and so forth, the ox only can go around within a circle. So this is an analogy to illustrate the idea of restriction of the senses. So Srila Prabhupada made the interesting statement that if you are conditioned, within your condition you can see, you can experience, but beyond that you have no right to see. So this is a restriction that actually limits your power to see within certain limitations. So Srila Prabhupada is explaining then that this area that we know about, in which you have Los Angeles, Calcutta, Japan, and London, and those places, is a very insignificant part of the total picture. So that's one conversation. Now there's another one that he had, which also sheds some interesting light on this question. Actually, this was during the same day. They're talking about the same topic. So Srila Prabhupada was referring to the fact that the earth is compared to a lotus flower in the Bhagavatam. So let's see. Where do we start here? Prabhupada. So within the limit, suppose the lotus petal, this way, that way, or this way, Tamal Krishna, you're asking us to draw the details and make a planetarium, very exact. Prabhupada, yes, lotus petal. It is round, so in one lotus petal you are conditioned. You cannot go. Tamal Krishna. So far that hasn't been said, but that's... If you say that Bharatavarsha is a petal of the lotus, but I think if you look at the Bhagavatam it may... I'd have to see it, what it says. There is a statement that it may be the inner portion of the lotus. And what we do, it has to agree with the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada, lotus petal. There are so many petals. You are conditioned with one petal. Tamal Krishna. If that's the explanation, then it can be somehow adjusted. Prabhupada, you do not know what is going on outside. Devotee, there's so many round parts of a lotus petal. Tamal Krishna, yes, that part could be adjusted. But there's a place within it, you know, the center part, there's no petals. In the middle of the lotus, there's like a, I don't know what you call it, it's a flattish area. They show Krishna standing sometimes when they draw a picture of Krishna on a lotus. Prabhupada, that's all right, but your place is in. Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna, that we accept. Prabhupada, that we have to hear from authority. Tamal Krishna, we accept that. I'm just thinking, Prabhupada, unless you are obstinate, you have to accept if you are convinced. Tamal Krishna, we accept. Prabhupada, there are so many millions of stars and moons that we cannot go. Tamal Krishna, let's see, where does it go here? As we are conditioned, so everyone is conditioned. Our planetarium will have to show the actual facts. Prabhupada, yes, that fact we have learned from Bhagavatam. Tamal Krishna, so far we have not drawn this fact correctly. Prabhupada, that is your ability. That is an inability. That is another thing. So there are different questions. He finally, Prabhupada says, that is the explanation. Petal. So, just to put together these two conversations, one comes up with an interesting picture of the situation of the earth. There is a description in the Bhagavatam in which Bhumandala, well, specifically Jambudvip, is compared to a lotus. Now, in the center of a lotus that's fully developed, there's a sort of seed pod, which is a cone-shaped object in the center where all the seeds are located. So that corresponds to Mount Meru. And then extending out from that, there are lots of petals. So Srila Prabhupada is comparing the place where we are to such a petal. So, but then again, you can still say, even if you think of a petal coming out from a flower, that doesn't really explain how the earth could be a globe, because where's the stalk that connects the petal? But Srila Prabhupada also gave the example of the animal bound to the central post to illustrate a fundamental limitation on one's senses. You could also say, well, if we're on a petal, then why can't we see the other petals? You can imagine if you're standing on a lotus flower on one petal, if you could shrink down, you could see all the other petals next to you. But Srila Prabhupada says here that specifically that you couldn't see the other petals. So there are other places in the Bhagavatam where you see the same principle in action. For example, I've given the case of Lord Brahma, in fact, going down the stem of the lotus on which he was born, trying to find its origin. And of course, in the paintings that we see, you can easily see what the origin is, because there's Garbhodakshai Vishnu down there, as you can plainly see. But Brahma couldn't see that. That was not within the power of his vision. So this idea of a limitation of vision is there. This relates to the concept of higher dimensions, as I've mentioned before. And another illustration you can give is this example of people with varying numbers of heads and arms. For example, consider the pictures you see of Ravana having 10 heads. The artists usually have a bit of trouble portraying that, because you see several heads in a row with the necks hanging down in space. So this is a bit difficult. Now, if you really want to put 10 necks going into one torso, unless you make the shoulders very broad, this becomes a bit awkward. You can imagine, of course, accommodating 10 heads if you, let's say, made the necks very thin or something like that. But then there's the description of Lord Brahma's visit to Dwarka, in which Krishna revealed to him all the Brahmas from other universes. And there you have Brahmas with hundreds of millions of heads, for example. Actually, there's a painting by Jadarani in Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, in which she tried to portray this. It is rather difficult. You see what looks sort of like a Christmas tree of heads. But it turns out, though, that if you go to higher dimensional space, you can accommodate all of these things. In fact, another example would be the many arms that come out of one shoulder. For example, Banasura had 1,000 arms. So from one shoulder, you'd have 500 arms coming out, assuming that he's symmetrical. So if you have 500 arms, you might make them sort of like spaghetti, very thin. But that wouldn't be a very good representation. But actually, they should be normal arms. But how is it that they don't get in the way of each other? That becomes the question. Well, as a matter of fact, they can be accommodated within a higher dimensional space. In fact, I even made a little computer model of that on one occasion, and I have a videotape of it. I didn't try to have 1,000 arms coming out of one shoulder, but I used four-dimensional space and had 2 arms coming out of one shoulder in such a way that in 3 dimensions they project into an overlapping region. So the 2 arms seem to overlap, but in fact they don't overlap because they're in a higher dimensional space. And you can easily accommodate then the 2 arms in 4 dimensions. If you go to many dimensions, you could have as many arms as you wanted coming out of one shoulder, and they would all interact without any problem. You can consider in this case the logic of Banasura operating the bows and arrows that he was using to shoot at Krishna. It's said that with 500 arms on one side, he was holding 500 bows, and he was simultaneously drawing the bowstrings back with his other 500 hands to fire arrows at Krishna. Now you can see the problem there is that if you have 500 bows aimed in the same direction, they must be on top of one another. So you could say, well, they pass through each other. But then the 500 arrows also pass through each other. But each arrow is constrained by the bow that's firing that arrow. The bowstring is pushing the arrow and so forth. So the bowstring doesn't pass through that arrow, but it does pass through the other 499 arrows and so on. But in the higher dimensional space where you have room for everything, there's no problem. You can have all these bows and arrows being manipulated simultaneously, and they don't interfere with one another. So that's actually a possibility. So this concept comes up again and again in the Bhagavatam. Another example where you sometimes see paintings would be the heads of the Kali and Naga. There are some paintings in which you see the lower section of Kaliya is extremely thick. And you have a lot of necks coming up, sort of looking like very thin strands extending up. So that's an attempt to show how you could have thousands of heads coming out of one body. But again, I suspect it's a higher dimensional situation. So you don't have to have that awkward, thick section of the Kaliya serpent. So, in any case, going back to the earth, what one would have would be that just as Ravana has many heads coming out of one neck, so you have many globes arrayed with higher dimensional connections forming the earth, and we're constrained to one of those. So we can only see one, and to us that looks like the whole thing. But actually there are many of them. So that's the analogy that Srila Prabhupada makes here with the many petals, and we're constrained to one particular petal. So that would mean then that the total earth is something much bigger than anything we're accustomed to imagining. Because in fact, the earth as we know it is just a small part of the total manifestation of the earth. So in that sense, Srila Prabhupada says that this area with Los Angeles, Calcutta, London, and so forth is insignificant compared to the totality. So that's a little bit about the earth. Going back to Lord Varaha, of course, then this is the earth that Lord Varaha lifted. So if the earth that Lord Varaha lifted is like that, then what can you say about Lord Varaha? He must also be multidimensional then, which of course makes sense if you consider the total pastime of the lifting of the earth from an ocean. So what that means then is that Krishna's potency is completely inconceivable, which of course was one basic point Srila Prabhupada made in the purport. So it's getting a little bit late. I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? Verli?
I didn't understand your explanation. I did 500 arms
on each side, molding conventional, and shooting probably arrows. But now here's Krishna, standing here in one place.
Right.
So now all these arrows are from all dimensions, have to come back into the dimension that Krishna's standing in to shoot at, or anybody else, or a mountain. Let's say you can say, well, Krishna shoots in many dimensions. All right, but what about, you know, when he beats mountains? We have a mountain in just our normal three dimensions, and here he is beating him, and all his arms from other dimensions are coming in and out of this dimension to beat that mountain. How does it work?
Well, you see, higher dimensions include three dimensions. So you can have the arrows lined up in one particular dimension, let's say the x-axis. They're all going to point right down the x-axis. But they extend in other dimensions, y, z, w, q, and so forth. So therefore, at the level of the bows, they don't interfere. But they're aimed along x. Now you can keep them aimed along x, but then the next step you have to do is shift the W and Y and Z coordinates and so forth so that they all are going through the same space when they hit the target. That would be a necessary feature of this particular model. But you can do that.
So you see, so if I was seeing Master, I just see two arms shooting, all of a sudden 500 arrows are hitting
me. It might be like that. Actually, you'd see them superimposed. You may have heard of in computer graphics, there's something called 3D Studio. So I had to invent 4D Studio in order to make this picture. 4D Studio is under development now, and it will be released shortly. It's going to be purchased by Microsoft. They don't know yet that they have an application for it. There's a very big market. But in any case, you can actually represent that. By the way, I should also add as a final thing, you may think, well, this is something from the mythology of the Bhagavatam, but people are doing experiments with this multidimensional space. I even have some videotape. This, of course, gets one into a controversial area. But here's the idea. Suppose you have two wooden rings. And just for the sake of argument, let's say they're made of two different kinds of wood. One is pine and one is oak. And they're not broken. So you could examine the rings and you could see that they haven't been cut and glued together. Because if you want, you could go around with a microscope and make sure there was no splicing. Now, suppose those two rings were interlocked. How could it happen? One oak ring and one pine ring that haven't been broken, as you can tell by inspection, and they're interlocked. So that would be mysterious if you were shown something like that. So people have tried to achieve that with the idea that subtle entities can move objects in another dimension. It's actually very easy to see that if you had two rings that are separate, being separately carved, and if you could move one ring a little bit, let's say in the W dimension, leaving X, Y, and Z, then in the X, Y, and Z dimensions, you could pass them like this, and there'd be no collision because they're in different W positions. Then shift the other rings W back to zero again. Now they're interlocked. So I have some photographs of objects like this, which have been linked. So in any case, only photographs. There's a guy down in Vero Beach who claims to have the objects. Well, I've seen, but I can't say that I inspected them with a microscope to make sure there were no cuts. You see, there are various limits to one's investigation. But anyway, I just thought I'd mention that because this idea of higher dimensions and all that is involved with it may also be something with empirical verification, interestingly enough. Yeah, Pushkar?
Well, I once looked up through here, the question is the globe, this rock, the globe, round globe. So how would you explain
that? What says?
Sorry, all round globe.
That Baraha picked up?
Yeah, if we go to the universe, we see that pick up a blow, not a bullet, no, or...
Yeah, well, if you want to go through the Shastra, you'll find that... I know that. He picked up Bhumandala without a doubt, the whole thing. No, it's not. It's more like a disc that extends 4 billion miles. It's very clear that he picked up the whole of Bhumandala. So there are both commentaries and specific verses that say that. Also, if you look in the Vishnu Purana, it's very elaborately described how he picked up the whole of Bhumandala. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, I mentioned this in another class, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur did a calculation in which he shrank in Bhumandala a little bit from the shell of the universe. I mentioned this last time. By 17,000 yojanas, I believe it was. This provided a gap so that Bhumandala could move up and down. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said specifically, this enabled Lord Varaha to lift the earth, because if it went right out to the shell, then it couldn't move. So he provided a gap so that it could move up and down. So, yeah, it's explicitly stated. However, then again, Srila Prabhupada has said that Bhumandala is a system of globes, which is another consideration. But then how could that be? So if you look into the whole thing, you get into this whole topic of the higher dimensions and so forth. You can't simply make a three-dimensional model of it. That's what I would propose. So, in any case, yeah? You could say, just like you're familiar with X, Y, and Z, well, why stop with X, Y, and Z? Suppose there's a W and additional coordinates. Mathematicians have worked this out. They generally deal with what they call n-dimensional space, where n is any number you want to pick. N could be a billion billion if you like. So you can have higher dimensional space. And so that's the idea I'm introducing there. Yeah?
Is a multidimensional concept and explanation of these difficult visions seems a little bit too easy. How do you reconcile that with the scientist view of the universe? Like, they say, we see the Earth as a globe floating here in space, and you say, well, you just don't see it all because your senses aren't equipped to see other dimensions. And that's like, that's an easy answer, but there's no proof for that. How do we prove the Bhagavan in terms of people with limited senses to understand?
Well, one has to recognize that some things may be difficult to prove, but I just mentioned this idea of an empirical verification of the higher dimensions. Now, to show that immediately for the entire Earth may not be such an easy thing, but maybe for those little rings and so forth, you can begin to get the idea. In fact, people were, to my knowledge, first thinking about this back in the 19th century. There's a German scientist named Zollner, a physicist in fact, who was thinking of this, and he started doing experiments back then in which rings would be made to link, or a single loop of string that's not broken would develop a knot in it. Imagine you have a continuous loop of string. Without breaking it, can you put a knot in the string? And he demonstrated that. But you can't do that in three dimensions, but you can see very easily if you can go into a fourth dimension, you could put a knot in the string without breaking the string. So it's possible that there may be some evidence that these things could exist. By the way, another interesting point is in physics, in the most respectable area of modern physics, there's something called the Kaluza-Klein theory. You may have heard about Einstein and his search for a grand unified theory. He wanted to unify electricity and gravity in one formula. Well, way back in the 1930s, a man named Kaluza thought of a way to do it. He said, we'll add another dimension of space, and we'll write Einstein's own equations for five-dimensional space. Einstein already had four dimensions because he treats time as a dimension. So he already had four-dimensional space. So Kaluza said, we'll add a fifth dimension and write down Einstein's equations just with the modification for going to the additional dimension. And that gave him a theory that included electromagnetism and gravity in one unified formula. And it worked. So he wrote, but maybe that's not the only way you could. There are other possibilities there. So there's more to this whole subject than meets the eye.